Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
What's happening, friends? It is episode number 47 of the Awful Announcing Podcast. My name is Ben Heisler, and happy start of the NBA season to you for 2019-2020. It's a big day. We are, of course, recording this on opening night of the association kicking off, and I'm very excited to be talking with Candace Parker on the podcast today. Of course, you can see her on the NBA on TNT, along with NBA TV with the Turner Sports family. Before that, she just finished her 12th year playing pro ball for the Los Angeles Sparks, and of course, if you've known the name for a long time, she's been one of the most decorated women's basketball players of all time. There's a lot to dive into with her today. Really gave some unique insight into the life of being one of these heavily touted prospects ever. Gave some perspective, with Zion Williamson starting his NBA career. Obviously, he's not playing tonight, but you know, there's a lot of similarities in their story. At least all the hype and the great college fanfare. So we got some perspective on that. Got a chance to learn about how she started to call games and become a studio analyst for Turner. And she also has a new podcast out with our good friend Kristen Ludlow that debuts next Tuesday. Before we get started, please make sure you guys are following Awful Announcing on Twitter, at Awful Announcing. If you'd like to follow me, you can do so at Benny Heiss. And if you've enjoyed the podcast as well as the really fun guests that we've been fortunate enough to be able to have join us and they really sit down and they're open and candid and give a lot of their time, and they've been a lot of fun to talk to over the course of the show. Please go ahead and rate and review the show over in Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast from. And of course, for all the latest news, commentary, and perspective in sports and in sports media, you can head on over to awfulannouncing.com. So Candace Parker is with us, and before we really get started, I have to tell you that I got a chance to watch you play in person for Naperville Central. And it just so happened to be against my New Trier Trevians in the 2004
New Trier
championship game. Yeah, awesome. You lit us up in that game. Do you remember your stat line?
I do not remember the stat line, but I remember you guys had like 5,000 students at your school. So you guys had some pretty good basketball players that were a part of that team.
We did, but I mean, they weren't Candace Parker good. I have the stat line in front of me. You ready for this?
All right.
10 of 13. 9 of 11 at the free throw line, 29 points, 13 boards, 8 blocks. Like, you were just getting up and just swatting everything away, and then I just sort of knew we had an outside chance, but no, you completely shut us down in that game. That was fun, and it was cool for me just as a basketball fan to be able to see you play at the sort of that beginning stage before this really long, incredible professional career.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Where did your first love of basketball come from? Was it just being a kid around the 90s in Chicago, in the Chicagoland, Illinois area?
I wanted to do everything my brothers did. And so that kind of is where my love of the game. I mean, there was a ball in my crib at 2 weeks old. I went to my first game, to see my brother at a very, very young age. And so it was just kind of like always what we did as a family. And when it came time for me to be able to join basketball, I was so excited to start playing because my older brothers would come and watch me play. And it was like a family thing where everybody would be watching me play basketball. And so that's kind of how it started. And then it just kind of grew into something that I really enjoyed doing.
What were those games like against your brothers? And when were you able to finally get the best of them?
Man, so they're so much older than me. So they're 11 and 8 years older than me.
Okay.
And so I'm the little sister that got to play, when the game was over. So my dad and my brothers would play, and then they would let little me come and, start playing. And so I really watched and tried to, master their moves so that when I did get a chance to come in and play, I could do some things. So that's kind of where that came from.
When did you first realize that you knew that nobody could even come close to touching you on the court?
I was always bigger and taller than everybody. And so, catching the ball and making a layup was easy because we practiced that and things like that. But when we got older, and I think it was like when I was around 12, and I went to this national tournament in Orlando. And that's kind of when I came onto the scene. So that was probably seventh, eighth grade, when I really kind of realized, okay, I really love doing this and I'm pretty good at it. So I'm going to keep working hard to kind of try to get better.
How much did your game develop? Like, you were really tall and you were a lot bigger than a lot of the girls you're going up against, but you still were able to shoot from the outside. You had an overall well-rounded game. Like, did you feel like you had to adjust at some point, even when you started to get more competition, or was your game always just sort of overall based?
It's so funny that you asked that, because my dad, they looked at my dad like he was crazy when he had this, like, tall daughter that was bigger than everybody, where the whole, like, positionless basketball and everybody's encouraged to shoot from the outside and all that stuff. This was like, you know, in the Stone Age of like bigs. Wow, bigs can like dribble and chew gum. Like, this is crazy. And so everybody looked at my dad crazy when I played point guard. And honestly, I was the tallest on the team. But he was like, you know what? What if you don't grow? Like, what if, you know, my grandma is 5'6". So like, what if you take off after your grandma? You grew early and then you stop growing. Then what? So really, that came from my dad.
Was he the best coach? Well, I wouldn't say the best coach that you ever had, but, like, was he the most challenging coach? And you've played for a lot of really tough coaches, but, you know, anytime it's family and working with you, especially over those early years, was he the toughest coach in sort of a different sense for you?
My dad is super knowledgeable about basketball and really understood what pushed me and the buttons that he could use to get the best out of me. There were many a nights where we would drive home in silence after a game. I can probably count on one hand how many times he's been like, you played a really good game. Not many. And that's the thing, that he's very honest. We had to actually enact the 24-hour rule, where we had to wait 24 hours to really reflect on the game, because we would be arguing and in the car, and it started not affecting our relationship, but when you're at home and you can't do anything else but talk about basketball, my mom was like adamant about that. So, he's one of the most challenging coaches I've ever played for. He prepared me to be able to play for Coach Summit, to be able to play for Michael Cooper, to be able to play with those tough coaches that really, you know, try to push you and get the best out of you.
From the toughest coaches to the toughest players, you faced a lot of really stiff competition over the course of your career. Who's the best player that you ever went up against? And it could be anybody. It could have been in practice. It could have been an actual game or a pickup game. But who was the toughest competitor on the court that you ever faced?
That's a really good question. I would like to break it down kind of with college and professional, because I think, I mean, Simone Augustus was the toughest college player, in my opinion, that I played against. She just had this release that you couldn't block. I remember at Tennessee preparing to play them, and then you had to defend her. It was, you know, Tamika Johnson and Sylvia Fowles. So it was just almost like, who do you cover? And so I think in terms of college, she definitely is. Professional, there's a lot of tough players that I've played against and that, you know, I've been a part of the team. Obviously, I've played with Lisa, but I think Lauren Jackson is who I really idolized a little bit, because she was that big that could step away from the basket, could score. And I remember my rookie year when my coach was like, hey, you're guarding Lauren Jackson. And I was like, oh, okay.
I mean, Simone Augustus is a really intriguing name that you brought up, and tell me if I'm wrong, but you know, you talked about that quick release. I mean, that's so much of what's going on in coaching right now too, especially for smaller players. And it's not to say that Simone was short by any means. I think she was right around, I'm looking her up right now, she's about 6 feet. But like they're teaching that quick release and the Curry release, and I almost feel like she kind of popularized that before Steph did.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about her shot is that her release is like a lot higher, so blocking it isn't really what you want to do defensive wise, because you're not really going to block it, and you really just try to discourage it from her pickup. And then you also try to, you know, when you're contesting the shot, you kind of contest in front of her face as opposed to trying to, you know, contest the ball. So it was unorthodox, it was quick, she had handles. I mean, Simone was the deal. I mean, obviously in the pros as well, but in college, I remember that she was a problem.
Because of your ability to play all over the court, and now that we're talking about more and more into the transition of positionless basketball, like, you've had a front row seat to both on the NBA side and also on the WNBA side of so much versatility in the game, and I'm curious to get your perspective on moving away from a lot of interior post play and really moving and changing the pace and the dynamic of basketball. And I'm curious to just get your overall perspective of how it's changed just over the course of your career as a player.
It's been fun for me to see the evolution of the game, in a sense. Just from when I was younger, it was frowned upon for a big to be away from the basket. You set picks, you roll, you get layups. You know, practicing threes was pointless. So now where it's encouraged and it's looked at like, wow, that's unstoppable. And, you know, you think of players that kind of did that. I remember being a huge fan of Lamar Odom and watching him play and the way that he pushed the ball. I mean, even if you go back to Chris Webber being able to handle the ball.
Yeah.
You know, as far back as Charles Barkley. I mean, so when I got to work at at Turner with all these guys, I had grown up watching them play because they were a part of the evolution of, you know, positionless basketball. I mean, they had a hand in Giannis being able to handle the ball and Dirk being able to, you know, step away from the basket and shoot threes. And on the women's side, I mean, I even look at it, our game kind of became positionless earlier or accepted earlier in a sense. You know, you think of Lauren Jackson, when she came over from Australia, and a lot of people didn't realize that she could stretch the floor. She could play. I mean, Tina Thompson, the same thing. And so that's kind of what I wanted to bring to the game is, you know, come into the WNBA, being able to handle, being able to run the floor, and being able to shoot.
A lot of times, you know, the NBA and really all professional sports tends to be a bit copycat. And they're trying to, like, figure out the next phase and the next evolution of what the sport is going to be. But, I mean, if you're talking about sort of this competitive advantage that the WNBA tried to figure out before anybody, I mean, how advantageous would it be for the NBA to really continue to follow what the WNBA is doing and really learn from a lot of the action that's right in front of them?
I think that both games can learn from each other. You know, the NBA obviously has been at it for over 70 years. I mean, it's a brand of basketball that has grown. And it's interesting that things go with, you know, what's caught on in the sense of before when we first watched Steph Curry in that San Antonio Spurs series where he had 50 and he was pulling from 40 feet coming down. Everybody, that's a terrible shot. They're never going to win championships like that. That's terrible. And then now you look at basketball and people are building their teams to take these shots and to shoot from the outside. And spacing is so big. And very rare do we see the ball go into the post and then make a move. Mid-range jump shots are told to be terrible shots. And so the WNBA, in a sense, is, you know, kind of going that way. If you look at the last two champions, I mean, Washington as well as Seattle, they both shoot the ball very well. They spread the floor. But I think the WNBA still has its own brand of basketball, and I really want to hold on to that. I do think that you still can play through the post, and I think that that's been an important part of our game.
We'll get to your transition into media in a second, but you know it's crazy to think about that. You've just finished your 12th year playing pro ball, and listen, for all I know, you may want to play another 12 years, but what would be the ideal next step for you? Would it be focusing on the media work that you're doing full-time, or have you thought about coaching or working inside the front office for either the NBA or the WNBA? You know, after you're done playing, and again, it could be whenever you want it to be, what's sort of that next point that you'd really like to pursue?
Love playing basketball. I think that's the best job in the world. Being a basketball player, being able to wake up every day, go compete, represent Los Angeles, that means a lot to me. The second best job to me is talking about basketball, because you do that anyway. On your couch, you debate, whether you're in the barbershop, getting your hair done, nails done, whatever, you're debating about who's the best, what's the best era, who's going to have a breakout season. And so to be able to have that be my job, I mean, that's to me what I would love to do, because I feel like I always want to be a part of the game of basketball, and that's a way to do it. I'm with in a great situation right now. It's a family like atmosphere. I love the people I'm around, and I get to talk basketball. What's better than that?
How were you approached by Turner to be an analyst for them? How did those conversations ultimately come up?
The conversation started over time. I just make a couple appearances, whether it be on Area 21. I think that was my first time going. Then after that, it just kind of was, hey, do you want to come to All-Star and you know, be a part of that weekend with Area 21? And then it was, hey, will you come be an analyst for a night? And so that's kind of how it went. And then I really loved doing it. Learned a lot from the people I was around. I mean, I'm around some of the best basketball players to ever touch the ball and some of the best commentators. And so I just kind of learned, watched, realized this is something I wanted to do. I think for me in my entire life, it's always been I don't ever want to do one thing. I always want to have a balance. I always want to be able to be versatile and, you know, do different things on the court. I get bored with that. So this allows me to be able to still have a life and do other things. I really love being at home with my daughter, being able to take her to school, all that stuff. And so commentating, I do it 2 days a week, and then I'm home the rest of the time. I can coach my daughter. I can, you know, do other things, go other places. And so that's what I love it.
Was there anybody that when you first started as an analyst that you really looked up to? And consequently, were you able to talk to them about what the job and the position was like and sort of what to expect leading up to it?
I've always respected, Kenny Smith. Inside the NBA was something I have on anytime they're on. I really enjoy watching that show. And Kenny Smith lives in LA, and I've spoke with him a number of times. But there's been a lot of people that have helped me along the way. I mean, Jay Williams, Jalen Rose. There's been a lot of different people. Holly Rowe is another one that really has kind of just talked to me about how I can get better and what I should do and things like that. And you definitely need those people that are going to be those mentors in your life.
What about the opportunity that just came up? You and friend of the show, Kristen Ledlow, you guys said put your heads together, have a new podcast out. How did those conversations start, and what can we expect from it this year?
We are so excited about this podcast. We wanted an authentic podcast that talks about basketball, not just stats and, you know, who had a great game last night. A podcast that really represents us and the way and the direction that basketball is going. The way that sports is going. And that's what we want to emphasize. It's not just a basketball podcast. That's not what we want. We're going to talk about culture. We're going to talk about, we can talk about a number of different things within the news. And we want other people's input. We want people to enjoy talking about it. Listen, I live in LA, so I know what it's like to drive down the 405 with no great podcast to listen to. So that was kind of the motivation behind it, is to provide that, have some guests, have some fun, and to talk about what we love.
I heard Reggie and Kevin promoting it earlier on the NBA on TNT when you were part of that podcast as well. I think the first episode is debuting a week from the day that we're recording this, on October the 29th. So I'm excited about it. You guys have already had some promos coming out. Looking forward to seeing what you guys have. And, you know, Kristen's a friend of the show, so the fact that you guys are teaming up together is really exciting. I got to ask you about the league itself, being an analyst at NBA on TNT and Turner, because there's so many interesting aspects of the season that I want to get your perspective on. And, of course, the season is tipping off tonight. You got the Pelicans and the Raptors, new-look Clippers and Lakers. And I know Zion's going to be out with a knee injury, but I feel like you guys may have a bit of a similar story, just as highly touted prospects that excelled at college. You know, he was only at Duke for a year, but arrived with a lot of these sort of unheard of expectations. And I wonder if you feel like maybe your stories are a little bit similar. And would you have any advice to offer him as he starts his professional career?
You know, it's fun to sit back at this stage in my life and to see things through a different lens. You know, when you're that young kid and there's all this hype, you're really just going through the motions in terms of, you know, you're working out, you're doing what you're supposed to prepare yourself for the season. But I would really just say, as cliche as it sounds, just to enjoy the moment, because no matter how great he becomes or is, he's only going to have one rookie year, and you're only have one chance to really kind of make an impression. And that's kind of the way I look at it. I mean, he's going to have his ups and downs. He's going to go through bumps in the road. This is just one of them with him being out. But I think he's going to be a phenomenal talent, and he's got a work ethic. He's a good person from what I hear, and I think he's going to do huge things in the NBA.
I'm excited for him, and I know that the conversation has sort of been about whether or not he's proportional or whether the weight's an issue. Man, like, all I know is that the guy can play, and he's so exciting to watch. And even without him, too, Candace, like, I like the Pelicans this year. I love how they space the floor. They play really fast. And I also kind of feel that way about Denver. And I feel like they take a step in the right direction as well. Are there any teams or players besides, you know, the obvious standard guys that maybe your eyes get glued to whenever they're on the court or whenever that team is playing? Any teams that you're really interested in trying to see their growth and trajectory this year?
You know, I've always been a Portland Trailblazer fan, just because I love Dame Lillard. I love what he brings night in and night out. And I know he plays in Portland, and so you know, it's West Coast, it's late. If there's a game on, it's probably the Lakers or the Clippers, especially this year.
Yeah.
So it's tough for a lot of people to see him, but he is dominant. And I look for what Portland did last year. I know they got swept by the Warriors last year without KD. I understand that. But I think they made a huge step in the right direction in their moves in the offseason. I think Hassan is looking to make another impact on a team. And I think that that's going to be huge for them. Forgetting Nurkic went out last year late with a horrific leg injury.
Yeah.
He could have definitely helped them. And I think CJ McCollum is ready to step into that role. I mean, it takes time, and I think people want things right now. And sometimes people have to develop into that role and that ability to be able to take the reign when teams are doubling and tripling Dame Lillard. And I'm looking forward to the NBA being more of an equal playing field this year and not a clear-cut favorite.
I know you only have a few minutes left, so I'll get you out on a couple more questions. We talked about teams that are really intriguing to you. Any potential surprises for this year? And maybe a team like Orlando has the ability to take a step forward.
Okay. So you said it. So my brother works for Orlando. So
okay.
You said it first. I didn't bring this up, but I really do think Orlando is going to have a great season. I am a big fan. I doubted DJ Augustine, and I will be the first to tell you I didn't know about that move in terms of him being their point guard, but he really honestly has done a great job of running the show for them. He has experience. He's played, you know, a lot of quality basketball. Really love that, you know, that entire team, obviously. So I'm very excited to see what they're going to do moving forward.
And they're deep too, Candace. Like, you have Terrence Ross to back up and come on off the bench for Fournier. You have Awundu. They brought in Al-Farouq Aminu. Mo Bamba's coming off the bench.
Yeah.
So I mean, they're deep, and I think they're going to start to get with a little bit more confidence. And then if Markelle Fultz finds any sort of confidence with his jump shot this year, man, you're talking about a team that could really take a big step.
And that's the thing. And for me, this question is thrown around all the time. What's harder, to be the hunted, you know, or to be the hunter? And obviously it is to be the hunted. And Orlando right now is flying under the radar. Nobody is expecting them to do anything. And that's the best way to be, is to go out there and to get wins. I think it's going to be key for them to start the season well, because in an East, the race is going to be close.
Mm-hmm.
Things are going to come down to one or two games, as we saw last year, between fifth and eighth place. And if they can get off to a great start, I think they'll have a good season.
All right, last one. I can't let you leave without a quick thought on the team that we grew up watching, the Chicago Bulls. And it's nice to finally see them, you know, attempting to adapt to the modern era of the NBA. And granted, you know, they followed everybody else, and they were one of the last teams to do it. But, you know, they actually said they were going to do it with Jim Boylan, and now they're actually doing it. And I think Zach LaVine is primed for a big, big season, especially with how they're going to be going and actually following pace. So what do you make of this Bulls team this year?
Can I just tell you that I loved Zach LaVine from the time he came into the NBA? When he was with Minnesota and they let him go, I was extremely surprised. You know, I think there was the argument, like, you can't have Wiggins and LaVine. One of them's got to go. And I just wasn't sure that they made the correct decision of letting him go. The guy has a work ethic. He's got bounce. He's explosive. And I love the backcourt of him and Kobe White. I mean, those two, first of all, Kobe White moves like he's like 5'11", 6 foot, in a 6'5" frame.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable to watch him play in person and see how fast he is with the ball. The you know, Markkanen's going to be coming back. And I just think that it's a great balance of talent. And they're another team that's flying under the radar.
I'm excited for him. Like, it's been weird as a Bulls fan to finally be excited about this team after a long time, but I just feel like they're actually making growth and taking steps in the right direction. And, you know, after several years just waiting and waiting and waiting, it's good to see finally some positive, you know, steps in the right direction. Make sure you guys are following Candace on Twitter if you haven't done so already, @Candace_Parker. Her podcast, Ledlow and Parker, debuts on October the 29th. And of course, make sure you guys are watching her on NBA on TNT, NBA TV as well. She's going to be all over the place for coverage of the National Basketball Association this year. This was fun, Candace. Like I said, it's been fun to be able to see your career from the very beginning. I get to be one of the few people that can actually say that, and I appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Thank you so much. This is so much fun.